Hello and welcome to Critical Line Item. My name's Tom Rablick. Thank you so much for joining me for this particular podcast. In fact, this is number 201, the 201st podcast since I started doing this thing back in the middle of 2020 when COVID broke out, and the only way of doing any interview sensibly was doing it via Zoom and a podcast emerged out. That's thanks to all of you who've been tuning in from time to time for different topics. We're heading towards a federal budget in Australia, and we're looking at a cost of living crisis, a range of things happening at the moment, from a Senate inquiry being chaired by Senator Jane Hume from the Coalition to the federal government working on different initiatives to try and help people manage cost of living. And one of the areas that has prompted a lot of debate is the area of housing and immigration and impact investment in property. Now, I'm joined by the Managing Director of Rethink Investings, Scott O'Neill, and he's got a bit to say about the market and how the market looks and what people are going to be observing in the next little while. So we'll have a chat with Scott about some of that and what other issues you might want to consider. Scott, thanks for joining me.
Good to be here, Tom. Thank you.
Before we get into some of the more general topics, it's probably worthwhile giving people a feel for what the market is like from where you sit today. I mean, if we can start with residential and move on to commercial, and give people a flavour of what's out there.
Yeah, so it's been a fascinating market. Obviously, we've had all these interest rate rises since 2022, and amazingly, we've hit our 14th month, consecutive month of capital growth. Basically, the market's more expensive as a national average for residential properties, and it's quite interesting to see how quickly things are growing despite these higher interest rates. And a lot of it's off the back of, you know, massive amounts of immigration. There's a rental crisis, so, you know, rents are going up. There's a lot of capital still flowing into the residential and commercial markets for that matter. And, you know, some high-level stats. The fastest growing market over the last 12 months was Perth. In the last 12 months, it grew 18.6%, according to PropTrack Home Price Indexes, and this is April 2024. The second fastest growing market was Adelaide at 13.5%, Brisbane number three at 12.9%. And basically every market grew except for Darwin and Hobart, which had very modest falls of 0.6 and 1.7 respectively. So overall, the country has grown in value by 6.8% in terms of residential prices. And we're seeing similar figures in the industrial markets and retail. And office is obviously having a bit more of a hard time because of the work from home since COVID and changing work conditions has meant that the vacancy rates in those CBD office markets are quite high. So they've seen falls of up to 15 to 20% in some areas. So it's a lot happening, but overall, there's a fair bit of growth happening across the board.
Now, if we're looking at, I guess, the average hunter out there looking at the window wondering what they're going to do if they're renting and looking for a home, what are the things that people need to be, you know, thinking about in terms of the challenges they have right now?
Well, it really depends on what type of buyer you are. Like if you're looking to purchase your home, you are going to contend with higher interest rates for, you know, a longer period of time. There's also, you know, always depending on the data of the month, the prediction of when rates are dropping changes. So, you know, I think the current bulk of the economists are still factoring in two rate cuts before the end of 2024, but you and I both know that'll probably change next month when the new data comes out. You know, it's anyone's guess. So you don't want to bank on rates dropping before you buy your home, because if you're overstretched and you're relying on the cut, you could be in a bit of a cash flow situation. And, You've got to weigh that up as well as if renting makes more sense, because rents are growing so quick across the country as well. It's not a you know, a cut and dry question of renting versus buying either, because rents, there's upward pressure. And I think we hit a peak migration record last month. So that's meaning you're going to have to compete with more tenants and more renters. So it's, I guess there's no easy answer for you, but, you know, generally the landlords long-term will probably be in a better position than the renters, just because I think if you can get in, and obviously if rates drop at some point, if you're an investor particularly, you will benefit from these rental increases that will inevitably keep happening because it's an undersupplied market. So yeah, I think to answer your question, direct, you need to be confident you can cover the cash flow of the debt. And if you are a tenant, just you know, don't overextend into a place that you can't quite afford, because rents are probably going to grow at double digit growth rates at least for the next year or two.
I think one of the other challenges that the cohort you've just spoken about faces is how, not just a property challenge, that is, how do I pay rent? What do I do? It's the other parts of the life that they have, particularly discretionary spending. Is there any, you know, how much of that plays out in the way you talk to people about investing in property over time? You know, there's many things we can spend hard earned on, but there comes a time when you've got to stop throwing money around. On other things.
Well, it was interesting when, you know, when we were all locked down in those early days of COVID, investing became a priority for many people. Less traveling, you know, less shopping. There was a fair bit of online shopping, of course, that happened, which brought strengths into other parts of the market. For industrial property grew significantly because more need for logistics and storage, and you know, there's. We talk about the rental crisis in residential, but there's also an industrial rental crisis happening at the moment. It's just we don't talk about that because it's not really a mainstream thing. But basically, rents have skyrocketed to the tune of about 50% since 2021 in industrial. So massive growth rates in rent, which is putting, you know, that all adds to the inflationary equation at the end of the day. And it's a vicious cycle. But yeah, look, I think people have been prioritizing the roof over their head for the last few years, and that's why even in despite the interest rate increases, we've seen people pay more for houses, even though their cash flow is worse. So there is a cost of living crisis, but those who can, I guess, afford it are prioritizing homes more than they ever have. And I guess in the face of a short supplied market, it's been good for those guys or girls because they've seen very good capital growth rates in their properties. But I kind of see the trend continuing. It's just going to get more expensive across the board, and it's going to really divide the nation. This will become quite a political topic as it was in previous elections, but the gap will widen between the haves and have-nots as this country matures, you know, economically. And it's... you know, we've seen it in places in Europe where, like, there's the young people can never afford to buy properties in some parts, and it's almost like we're going that direction. Like, it's an interesting area.
Well, we can explore that a little bit. What are the factors that you see causing that? Is it the careers people choose to go into? Is it simply a fact that, you know, property is more expensive and young people entering into the market now are kind of capable of affording it, or are they wanting to be more mobile as they're younger and experience life, and then by the time they look to settle down, they haven't got the necessary capital to actually, you know, put on the table to buy a property?
Yeah, look, those factors could all be small factors into it, but I really think like there's no short of numbers of people that actually are, you know, dropping everything they possibly can to buy a house. But the fact is, as a multiple of the average income, houses are becoming more and more expensive. And I think the you know, everyone in my field, you know, the property experts really put it down to the lack of supply. Now, the government's obviously, you know, announced a lot more overseas immigration numbers to come in, but there's really no places for these people to live. Like, they haven't increased the necessary amount of houses to house all these people. So we're all fighting over a limited supply of properties from a tenant point of view, from a purchasing point of view. And until we sort of start opening up or reducing red tape with, you know, new supply of properties, it's almost, yeah, no, it's a big problem. Things will keep dividing, and I can't really see a solution. Even the fact that build costs have gone up so much, again, that all flows into even the rents, because you've got to builders need to make margins. Then the investors or homeowners who buy it need to purchase the property, and if they're renting it out, they need to get a reasonable return on their rent. So if they pay more for it, they need to get more rent for it down the track. So, you know, if you can somehow reduce the cost of building, that would help. But, you know, it's going one direction and it's up at the moment. So, yeah, not to be a bit doomsday, but it looks like there's a lot more cost increases coming.
Now, we got from time to time my podcasts, I know, are listened to by people who sit in a big house on a hill in Canberra, or I've interviewed them for this podcast, and in between them visiting the big house on a hill in Canberra. What measures do you think the government ought to be thinking about in order to make life just that bit easier when it comes to housing and property?
Look, I think more of those build-to-rent schemes are going to be an important factor. Like, this may be slightly controversial, but, like, everyone doesn't have to have the right to own a home. Like, again, I spent a lot of time in, you know, I spent 3-4 months in Europe a year, and, you know, it's a very different culture over there. Like, you know, like these other countries, they don't just think they're going to own a property. They're lifelong renters, and there's a lot of protection for the tenants in these places as well. So there's nothing wrong with renting. I myself rented for 10 years before purchasing an owner-occupier place, but I invested in the meantime. So, like, you make the sacrifices you need to make to get ahead. But, you know, if you've got a secure roof over your head, you know, that's often going to come from a rental. And if, like, no one, everyone can't own as well, because if, like, I see these rules the government bring in when they, you know, abolish stamp duty or give first home grants to people, and economically, all that does is increase the price, because if more people have lower barriers to entry, they've got, you know, their serviceability will grow, and then that end of the market will grow with it. It's kind of like basic economics. You know, if you waive stamp duty, everyone's got about 5% more than they can spend on the purchase price. So naturally, that area of the market will become more, buyers will be more aggressive, prices will rise. So, you know, they're going to lose it one way or the other. It's going to be paying more because you're bringing more people up with the same amount of money to buy the existing supply. And, it goes around. But, yeah, I think the build-to-rent schemes, just giving people access to more affordable leasing, is going to be a key to helping many Australians get ahead.
Now, you've spoken about what government should do. I guess you've covered the next question that I had in mind, but what, if anything, should government scale down? You know, what is it that government should stop doing or reduce, you know, the amount of activity in a particular area in order to make it more, I guess, easier for people to get themselves into a place, rental or otherwise?
Look, I think they've got to be careful with the amount of immigration they have. Like, as a property investor, it's music to my ears when you hear more people come to the country, because it's great. You know, it's going to flow on into the property prices. So I think there's got to be careful consideration with the supply, rather than just population growth for the, you know, because obviously there's economic benefits to that. That's one of the reasons they increased the numbers. You know, I think we were in a per capita recession most of last year, but it was obviously the net benefit of the migration that picked us up over the figure. So, you know, that's going to have lasting impacts on not only inflation, but cost of living for the whole middle class and lower class for a decade to come potentially as well, because it's going to take a long time to supply it. So I think it's more just they've got to do more to increase supply. It always goes back to the supply, and that's missed so often by commentators in the market. If you don't have enough properties, it doesn't matter what money you chuck at the problem, or you know, if you're giving grants or you know, concessions on certain things. If there's not enough properties to go around and they're all fighting over it, the problem's still there. And we're just not seeing build supply in most aspects of property, from units to even in the commercial side of things. There's not enough of it coming through the pipeline. So the problem is still there, and it hasn't been addressed.
One of the things that I certainly remember when I was younger, in my case, there were certain factors that drove the approach that I took to getting the place I'm in. And one of them is, you know, there are several health challenges I've had throughout my life. So one of the first things that was inculcated in me and then put into me was get, you know, save money for a property. get a home, get a mortgage. I haven't been to the US yet. I haven't done a gap year, right? But I've got a home. What are the types of things that you did in getting into investing that people could perhaps learn from? What are the things individuals need to be thinking about, aside from the disastrous kind of marketplace that they may believe they're in? You know, even having regard to that, there are things people can do to make it easier for themselves to get closer to owning a property. What are the types of lessons that you think your experience is able to, you know, provide people?
Look, what I did, and I know many of my clients do the same thing, because we're like you. We prioritize getting a home because we know if you can get in early in life, it's going to set you up financially. It'll make a massive difference. It'll allow you to invest after you buy your owner occupier. Like it's a game changer. And the earlier you get in, the more that profit will compound over time. So what I personally did was, it sounds really basic, but I prioritized picking jobs that paid better. And I know that sounds very simplistic, but like I became an engineer not because I loved the idea of, you know, building railways or anything like that. I did it because the graduate pay was better as an engineer than a lawyer. You know, things like that would, you know, not everyone has the opportunity to go to university, but everyone's got the opportunity to potentially work harder, have a second job, maybe travel for work. You know, there's a lot of potential for, you know, the side hustle thing that everyone talks about these days. And you know, it may mean you don't go to Europe every year or go to the US and have a holiday. Yeah. Like you sacrifice in your early years. You know, you can get into property with as little as 70 or 80K. You know, that's basically buying a 500 grand property. It may not be where you live in Sydney or Melbourne. It might be a, you know, a house on the outer suburbs of Perth. Like you remember that figure I just said at the start of the show. If you bought a 500 grand house in Perth and it grew 18.6%, you basically got another deposit for another house just from that if you refinance that. So that would have, you know, you would have been able to get into that market with about 75 grand cash, and the bank would have done the rest, because that would have been a 10% deposit plus stamp duty plus legal fees.
Yeah.
You know, this is not enormous figures of money. Like we're not talking millions of dollars you're saving. And I think most people, if they put their, you know, heart to it, can really dig down. It may take you years to save that type of money. You might be able to save it in a year if you're in a high-paying job. But I guess the trick is you've got to look outside your backyard and just get in that market, because the first property is by far the hardest. The second hardest is your second property. And, you know, eventually, you know, we've got some clients that have 15-plus properties. And when you're at that level, like every year you've got the ability to buy another one or two just through the equity that's kind of bubbling away in the background. And, yeah, you use the banks to your advantage. And I think people just need to start small and not just think the owner-occupier house, because that's probably the biggest thing that's changed over the last 20 or 30 years. We can't just buy a house in Sydney at five times the average income anymore. It's going to cost you 15, 17 times the average income. So maybe, you know, I'm from Sydney, hence why I'm quoting Sydney. Maybe Sydney's not your answer. You know,
yeah.
Go somewhere else and start there and work your way back into this market later.
But there's another thing, I guess, that plays out, isn't there? And that is, in thinking about what you want to do with property, what you want to do with your, well, I guess your sort of your life to start with, do you find in conversations with people, they sometimes that there's people struggling with things they enjoy in life, like at the moment there are several streaming services I use that I may need to cut back on, right, in order to do something else, for example. Is there any conversations you find that you have with people when they're coming to you tossing around ideas for investing about all the discretionary stuff that kicks around in the background?
Yeah, look, it is there. I guess a lot of the people that are attracted to, you know, a buyer's agency service like mine, they're generally quite, I would say they're quite educated already in that topic. So we're not really cold calling, you know, the everyday person. Like, these are people that, you know, read investing books and, you know, follow investing podcasts. So I definitely say in the early days I dealt with that a lot more, but I think it's almost, it's a given. Like, you need to have your savings ability down. That's stage one of investing. If you're not a good saver, you're not going to be able to deal with a loan, you know, and then the investing stress on top of it. So stage one is be a good saver. If you can't get that right, then property investing is definitely not for you. So fortunately, most of my, you know, in clients, they're well past that, you know, that basic type level. And, you know, it's just like keeping a budget. You've got to learn how to, you know, have a goal, how much you want to save per week, and then, you know, exceed that and beat it. And then you can start factoring in, well, I'm saving $400 a week. What kind of mortgage could I then lose to still be ahead? And then all of a sudden, you're starting to think like an investor, because you're going to have an outgoing called a mortgage.
Yep.
You can see your profits every week through your job. And then you can add rent and outgoings of the property onto it. And all of a sudden, you're going to know if you can really afford that property or not. But the good thing in Australia is banks are very conservative. So even if you're pretty hopeless at all that, the banks will see this and they'll do the fundamental checks on your finances. And, yeah, they'll only give you the loan if you can service it. So, yeah, there's not many of those dodgy loans like they were maybe 10 years ago as well. It's pretty strict. And that means if you can get the loan, you're probably going to be okay as well, assuming the bank's done their job.
Now, obviously, Scott, there's a lot that you know about, and possibly somebody will pick the podcast up along the way and want to have a chat to you. Where can people find out more about what you do, who you are, and how can they get in touch?
Probably the best way is just Google Rethink Investing. Like, our website's www.rethinkinvesting.com.au. And, yeah, we've been around for about a decade now, just helping people purchase residential and commercial properties. And, we're nationwide. So I guess we're investors, and that's the key. We're not really helping people find homes to live in. We're here to help them get the best dollar-for-dollar investment. And that's why I sort of talk a fair bit about investing efficiently and looking outside your backyard, because, you know, if you want to make money through investing, it's you want to pick the best area for your budget, and it's probably not going to be where you live. That's the unfortunate facts of life. So yeah, there's so many suburbs around, and you got to invest for where you can afford.
That's probably a good spot in which to end. I've been talking to the managing director of Rethink Investing, Scott O'Neill. We've shared a few ideas, I guess, with you about where the property market is, both in the residential and commercial space, and what you might need to think about if, in fact, you're heading down that pathway. Scott, thanks for the chat today.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate your time.
And I look forward to having another chat at some point in time when the federal budget lands and the climate changes a little bit further.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tom.